Welcome to Co-op Radio 102.7 FM CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. I have my co-host with me in the studio right now, Kevin Kelso. It's going to be archived on my website of angus-mcleod.com. McLeod spelled M-C-L-E-O-D. Our first guest has been a six-term Democratic Party member of the United States House of Representatives, who was the first African-American to represent the state of Georgia in the House. In 2008, she ran for the President of the United States under the Green Party. With this said, I'd like to introduce former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Cynthia. The first question I have to ask for you is that you did a peace conference over in Malaysia, and you're talking about Splitting the Sky, who's a very brave First Nations activist here in Canada. And what happens is that we've had him on Co-op Radio as a guest. He's a very brave individual. I also had a chance to meet him here in Vancouver, and I think Kevin's had a chance too. And what happens is, I feel, as a veteran of the Canadian military, the only one that should have been arrested that day was George W. Bush for war crimes against the people. And I feel that the Calgary Police Force and members of the RCMP who were there have turned against their oath that they swore, where they swore to protect and serve the people. And I was wondering, Cynthia, if you could quickly go through your speech very briefly and talk about what you said in reference to Splitting the Sky when you spoke over in Malaysia.
Well, the project that I am a part of in Malaysia is sponsored by the former Prime Minister, Tun Mahathir. And his goal, as is the goal of the rest of us who are participating, and I'm sure a larger part of the global community, is to criminalize war and hold accountable the leaders who take their countries to war. And, of course, our experience with Afghanistan, with Iraq, and the torture, the rendition, the war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide, and, of course, crimes against the peace have been committed all under the rubric of the Bush administration. And so Splitting the Sky did a very courageous act to serve a citizen's warrant for the arrest of a criminal. Now, that doesn't even include the crimes against the United States Constitution that were also committed by the Bush administration. The election fraud that put the Bush administration into office to start with. And so what we are seeing is the ability to take countries to war, to kill people, to bring death and destruction upon other countries, and to do that with impunity. The United States courts have failed, the international courts have failed, and so what is it that the people can do? We have come together in the Malaysia Tribunal, and recently the tribunal agreed that they can, as individual citizens of the world, do what is necessary in order to hold these national leaders accountable. And that's exactly what Splitting the Sky was trying to do, and that's why I mentioned him in Malaysia.
I wonder what your thoughts is, Cynthia. Here in Canada, our pension plan that everyone has to pay into, it is actually used, the funds of it, a percentage is used to make weapons components that are used in weapons of mass destruction. So indirectly, anyone who's Canadian who accepts the Canadian pension plan when they retire is making money off the spilling of innocent blood in another nation. What's your thoughts of that?
Well, perhaps a divestment plan would be in order for the people of Canada. I think certainly that the people of Canada have long enjoyed a reputation as having a foreign policy of conscience, but I just have to state for the record that the inauguration of the Bush administration also for whatever reason, encouraged people in Canada to vote a puppet government into office that seemed to follow the Bush administration lock, stock, and barrel. And if so, if innocent Canadians end up dying because the Canadian leadership was more loyal to the Bush administration of another country than they were to their own people, then that's something for the people of Canada to sort out.
And also, with our administration that's in power right now, the conservative minority government, I find that they're complicit with a lot of the war crimes because they are now trying to deport a lot of the war resistors. Rodney Watson's sitting in the United Church right now in a sanctuary, and he has, if he leaves the church, he's going to be basically shipped back to the United States, and he will face a long prison sentence. And yet our government's turning against that. I'd like to quickly raise that point, but I wanted to go on to the next question.
If I may say something just to draw a parallel, isn't it interesting that you bring up the case of the U.S. serviceman who is in a church, and in Honduras, we have a duly elected, democratically elected president who is seeking refuge in an embassy because the United States is bent on destroying the will of the people of Honduras?
I'm not surprised with that, because if you take a look at a lot of the background of the United States government, and even I'm pretty sure that the name Barrick Gold comes up there, and Barrick Gold is a Canadian registered company which tied in with Brian Mulroney, which tied in with the former president being George Herbert Walker Bush.
And Andrew Young, the former ambassador to the United Nations. I was actually in the process of investigating Barrick Gold when I was ousted from the Congress. So Barrick Gold is one of those entities that certainly is deserving of investigation for criminal behavior.
We had a past guest on called Jorge Lopendia. Jorge Lopendia is a legal owner of the mineral, the Minnepaska Llama mine. It's the third biggest gold reserve here in the world, and it's in Chile. And Barrick Gold tried to acquire this for $20 American. And it just shows you how much corruption. What happens is, the second that the Chilean court system recognized Jorge Lopendia as a legal owner right now, and the second that this hits the stock market news, that the stock market finally realizes that Barrick Gold is not able to deliver this hundreds of billions of dollars in gold that it promised, it's going to crash the stock market. But the only reason why it's being kept afloat right now is because we have corrupt officials here in Canada who own the court system, and the court system's heavily going after Jorge right now. But I wanted to quickly talk about when you're over in Gaza, heading over to Gaza, the members of the Israeli Navy kidnapped your people that went with you over to Gaza. I was wondering if you could quickly talk about that, and then I'm going to hand the mic over to Kevin to ask a couple questions.
Sure. My story with Gaza starts right on the very first day, which was, I believe, the day after Christmas, that Operation Cast Lead began. And Operation Cast Lead was Israel's military onslaught against the people of Gaza. And was December of last year. And so I received a phone call from the Free Gaza Movement asking if I would go to Gaza the next day. And I said yes, despite the fact that, well, it was obviously dangerous, but we had medical supplies, and they wanted to make sure that the medical supplies got delivered. So I participated, got on a boat with about 15 other people or so from various parts around the world. And the Israelis rammed our boat in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea while we were in international waters, and basically tried to kill us. Now, the Israelis told one story, but thank goodness we had journalists on board, and they told a different story, which was the truth. But I had the opportunity to see firsthand how CNN operates, because CNN didn't want to believe what their journalist who was on board the boat with us was telling us, because CNN wanted to broadcast the Israeli disinformation that was lies. And that journalist, Carl Penhall, proved to be a true journalist, and he refused to allow CNN headquarters to actually report the story, as it did not occur, but he forced them to report the story that he produced. Now, so we never made it to Gaza, and the medical supplies never made it either. But after the military attack was over, then we still had medical supplies, and we wanted to deliver them along with building supplies now, because of course Gaza was completely destroyed. And so we boarded a boat again. This was 21 of us, and this time the Israelis not only boarded our boat, commandeered our boat, kidnapped us, took us to Israel, from where I was deported after I spent 7 days in a prison because I wanted to take school supplies to the children in Gaza. And this kind of reckless disregard of international law, of course, is not anything new, and sadly, this is just in line with what the people of the international community have had to endure, particularly since the advent of the Bush administration and the decline of international jurisprudence.
This is CFRO 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio. You're listening to the Monday Brown Bagger, and we're here with Cynthia McKinney. As well, I'm the guest co-host, Kevin Kelso. Cynthia, you are the first congressperson that I'm aware of that was outspoken on the inconsistencies in the official story about 9/11. What was it that first made you suspicious of the story? And also, I listened to your YouTube video that was taken from C-SPAN when you asked some questions about Rumsfeld and other top officials being involved. You're very adamant on getting a response to that. Are there any updates on that front?
Well, actually, I think the 911 Truth community is to be applauded for refusing to accept the lies coming from the Bush administration. We, through an independent media organization, counted 935 times the Bush administration went to the American people and lied to them in the run-up to the Iraq War. Now, I know that they lied also about the 2000 election. They lied about the 2004 election. Mm-hmm. But now, if they lied about the 2000 election, why wouldn't they also lie about September 11th? Well, I didn't actually believe that they were lying about September 11th until, of course, all of the members of Congress were given talking points, and the talking points said that we were hit because we're free. Well, now, I represented 635,000 people in the United States, and I was supposed to go back to them and tell them that we were hit because we were free. You see, this was all very well orchestrated, and 534 members of Congress went back to their districts and said that we were hit because we were free. I refused to say that, and instead I decided that I would do my research and read newspapers around the world and find out what exactly other people were being told about what had happened to us on September 11th.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I don't think there's all that many people out there that really hate freedom. Most people, even if it's a perverted concept, they have some feeling that they're fighting for freedom. You talk a lot about the Bush administration's creating this war, and I totally agree. The beginning of it was completely unjust and manufactured. But the Obama administration is continuing this war. Obama himself has failed to come through on promises to end the war, and I think he also should have prosecuted the previous administration for war crimes, crimes against humanity, torture, and so forth. Do you have anything to comment about what Obama's doing? I know you're a Democrat,
yes,
but...
Of course, I've sent several messages to the Obama administration indicating that lest they perform the necessary investigations, they can be considered accessories to the crimes of the Bush administration. And, of course, torture has not stopped, rendition has not stopped, Guantanamo is still open. We still have an occupation of Iraq. We are about to see a increase in the troops in Afghanistan. The Bush administration is not only saber-rattling to Iran, but also increasing the troop presence in Colombia. And I started out by talking about the situation in Honduras, which appears to be an effort, a quiet effort on the part of the Obama administration to roll back the gains of the people, the people's gains in Latin America. This is not exactly, I believe, the kind of hope and change that many people in the United States voted for. And it's not only that people in the United States voted for candidate Obama. It is that people around the world were watching that election, and they supported candidate Obama because the abominations of the Bush administration had been so real that the change was demanded. But what I tried to say during my Green Party presidential campaign was that you're not going to get change from the Democratic Party. I had been a member of the Democratic Party for all of my elected political career, and I knew very well that the Democratic Party couldn't deal with speaking truth to power. They couldn't deal with a program of real economic and social justice. They certainly were not ready to stop funding the war when the Congress flipped over and had a Democratic majority. And if they weren't going to stop funding the war when they could, then their presidential candidate wasn't going to stop the war when he became president, and that's exactly what has happened. So, unfortunately, it's even worse than that, because the Obama administration has sent its Justice Department operatives into U.S. courts to defend the criminal activities of the Bush administration. So it's insult to injury. But, of course, some of us, we understand what the circumstances are, and we don't stop. We do the very best that we can to follow in the courageous footsteps of splitting the sky. So I hope, quite frankly, that I will, I hope that there's no case. Whatever the charges are ought to be dismissed. But in the event that the charges are not dismissed, then I hope to be able to come to Canada and speak on behalf of splitting the sky.
Well, we also hope that you're able to come to Vancouver here, because there's many of us activists would love to hear you, and you could even help us do a fundraiser for the Co-op Radio if you can, because we're a community-run radio station and we need as much funding as we can so we're able to keep the independent voice going, because right now, if you take a look at Vancouver, the Olympics, in my opinion, are nothing more than a corporate attempt to take over our city, where I've just heard that one of the laws that's been passed is actually same sort of law that passed in Salt Lake and in Atlanta, where they're going to be, the police are able to take the homeless right off the street, arrest them without any charges, pull them right off the street, and throw them in wherever they want. So our civil liberties are going to be seriously in danger of disappearing, with over 17,000 security forces being here, minimum that we know of, and then basically we also could have possibility of Blackwater here and everything else. But I wanted to know what your thought is of with the Obama administration. What is your thought as an activist for peace and someone who believes in the rights and freedoms and civil liberties and everything? What is your thought that Obama has now received the Nobel Peace Prize for I look at he's an emperor with no clothing, exact same as Bush, just as guilty of the war crimes.
Well, I just happened to have been at a 911 Truth event in Europe at the time. I was in Paris at the time of the announcement, and we were in the middle of our own press conference, and we had to disband in disbelief because, I mean, it's just so totally a joke. And basically what it demonstrates, though, is the complicity of all of the institutions that we used to believe in. They are now complicit in war crime and crimes against humanity, and it really is a blight on the face of the Nobel Committee, and unfortunately this isn't the first time that something outrageous like this has happened. I would have nominated Cindy Sheehan, and I'm sure that there are people who are fighting tremendous battles of resistance and in favor of peace all over the world, and they should have been at least considered. But, Henry Kissinger is also a Nobel Peace Prize winner, so that tells us that perhaps they have put themselves back on the same trajectory.
I would have seconded that motion for Cindy Sheehan. We had her as a guest last week, and what happens is I thank her for connecting us up with you, because it shows just in the activist community that how important it is for all of us to work together. Kevin has a quick question, and then we're almost out of time, so I'm going to let Kevin ask a quick question. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I just want to know what's on the horizon for Cynthia McKinney. What are we going to see you getting up to next? And do you have any a website to plug or anything like that, or a book?
Well, I wish I had a book to plug, but I don't. I've been a bit deficient. I've been doing so much. I need to stop doing at least for a little while, so that I can go in and do some writing. And actually, I've started doing some writing. I just need to finish it. And what's on the horizon? Well, people ask me that all over the country and everywhere I go and I travel. And I do think that there is some, we should be able to experience our own poetic justice. And at the proper time, I will be discussing how we can sort of exact some poetic justice from this system that is criminally unjust or unjust in the United States.
Well, I think we're all going to be waiting to hear more from you, because we just love everything that you've said so far.
I'd love to come up there and do a fundraiser. I know my son, who is a UBC graduate, would look very favorably on any excuse to get him back to the wonderful climb of Vancouver. I have to tell you that when my son graduated from UBC and I brought my mother and father up and everybody, the whole family came up, and honestly, nobody wanted to go back. It's so beautiful up there. It's so beautiful. Please protect your trees and your forests and your green spaces and your clean air. Please protect it.
Yeah, there's so much going on here behind the scenes here in the province of British Columbia. Right now, our minerals are being taken from us, and there's been no taxes collected on it. A few government officials have allowed certain laws to pass, which allows stuff to be start shipping down the United States. And at the same time, we're watching our jobs disappearing. We're watching billions of dollars each year, year upon year, being taken from us illegally. And yet what happens is when we confront politicians about it, all they do is they try to play hot potato by passing it on to someone else. And no matter how much we keep throwing at them, but we need people like yourself, Cynthia, to stand up and basically to voice this stuff to the public, because what happens is the more the prominent the speaker is telling the people what's going on, the more chance the people of BC and Canada finally have a chance of being free, because we want to break free from this oppressors that they're now controlling us. And I lived in the United States for almost 5 years. I had to live in exile because that's some of my past writing, and I've already ran amok with a lot of these elitists. And yet what happens is I learned through United States, I started learning about the Canadian, true Canadian history. And what I saw really frightened the living daylights out of me, because I did the military thing for almost 9 years. And then learning this stuff down in the United States, I'm just sitting there, I'm going, wow, as a Canadian, why wasn't I learning this when I was growing up? Why wasn't I learning what happened to the Native Americans in residential school? Why wasn't I learning that Ukrainians were interned from 1914 to 1920? You know, and the list goes on and on and on. And yet what happens is that we're not learning this true history. And going down there is where I learned about the true history. But Kevin has one last point, and then we have to, we're out of time after that. So go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, well, we look forward to possibly hosting you here, and I hope we can keep in touch so that we can make that happen. I think we have to wrap up the show. We're running out of time here. So I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And all your words were very inspirational.
Hope we have you back soon. Well, I look forward to coming to Vancouver, and I look forward to being on the show once again.
Yeah, we look forward to actually having you in studio, because that way Kevin will bring the camera at that time. And you're great help to Co-op Radio, because it's a community-run radio station that we really need the support of very prominent people like yourself to help raise the issues and to raise the exposure at the same time. Thank you so much for coming on, Cynthia McKinney. This is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO. This is Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. I'll be archiving this on my website of angus-mcleod.com. McLeod spelled M-C-L-E-O-D. And our next guest, he has been the recipient of the Eisenhower Medal, the George F. Kennan Peace Prize, the Presidential Medal for the Veterans for Peace, the Republic Aviation Award, Air Power Award, and countless other awards. He has also been a guest of our show in the past on August 18th, 2008, and has been up here to speak with the 9/11 Truth Society here in Vancouver. He did a cross-country tour with them. His name is Dr. Robert Bowman, retired Lieutenant Colonel from the U.S. Air Force. Hello, Doctor.
Hello.
Well, thank you so much for coming on our show. What I want to do is I want to play a quick clip, if I may, which came off of YouTube. This is from the CBC that put this out. And if I could get your comments on this right afterwards, if possible. So I'm going to play this quick clip.
Okay.
And you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to wonder exactly what President George W. Bush knew about the attack and when he knew it. According to the official White House version, it was at this moment in a Florida classroom that Bush learned the second plane had hit the World Trade Center and that the U.S. was under attack. But here's what George Bush himself said almost 3 months later when asked about September 11th.
I was sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in, and I saw an airplane hit the tower of a the TV was obviously on, and I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot, and it said it must have been a horrible accident, but I was whisked off there. I didn't have much time to think about it.
Now wait a minute. George Bush was told about the second plane while he was inside the classroom. So you just heard him describe seeing the first plane crash on television that day. But that's impossible. No one saw the first plane crash on TV on September the 11th because the videotape of it didn't surface until the next day. So how could George Bush have seen what he said he saw?
Dr. Bowman, could I have you comment on that, if you may?
Well, sure. That's one of many interesting things that raises questions about what he knew and when, and how he could have seen that. And you know, did he see the second plane go in and for some reason, you know, his staff didn't hear about it till later? I have no idea, but it certainly raises the possibility that he had foreknowledge, and that if he did see something on television, it was something that the rest of the world didn't see. But to me, there are more important smoking guns, especially Building 7, which wasn't even hit by an airplane, and yet came down in what appears to be a perfect controlled demolition of an intact building with no visible fires, and the collapse of which, by the way, was announced by the BBC and CNN before it happened. So, you know, we know the official story, the official conspiracy theory, is told us by the Bush administration and its puppet 9/11 commission is impossible.
Yeah,
we don't know what the truth is.
We've had Stuart Howe from We Are Change LA on. Also, we've had countless other guests on, and they're all talking about the fact that the 9/11 Truth Commission, the report that they did, there's actually some of them coming out. They're calling for a new one, and it's just amazing that if all of the truth was put into this to begin with, all of these accusations were investigated properly, truthfully, as an independent investigation, which is separate from the government, which here in Canada should be calling for, because there were 24 Canadians killed that day, and yet our government has refused to put it forth. So it's just, this is why it keeps raising these questions. All we're asking for is a proper independent investigation where all of the accusations are answered properly, all the speculations are looked into, and all of the real truth is presented to the people. That's all we're asking for.
Sure. Absolutely.
And the next thing I wanted to talk to you about there, Dr. Bowman, is, you know, since Obama's come to power, he has increased the troops in Afghanistan, attacked parts of Pakistan with the drone missiles, has kept the troops in, you know, Iraq, has beaten a larger war drum against the nation of Iran than Bush did, and has done many other things which appear that he is like the old emperor with no clothing. With all this said, what are your thoughts of a President Obama receiving the Nobel Peace Prize?
Well, I thought it was ironic. I have no idea why they chose him, except maybe wishful thinking. Maybe they thought that if they gave him the Nobel Peace Prize that he'd somehow try to live up to it, and he hasn't yet, of course, but he still has a chance to, but time's running out, because pretty soon the war crimes that Cheney and Bush were guilty of are going to be on his lap, too.
And with the nation of Iran, how close is the United States at this time to actually going into war with Iran and pulling the rest of the world into a possible World War III?
Well, of course, we're already, in a sense, at war with Iran, because we have troops on the ground inside Iran. And it's a very dangerous situation, and it's been one of my highest priorities is to make sure that the generals and admirals in the Pentagon take seriously their oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, including a renegade president, and refuses any order to attack Iran. And I started that campaign well over 2 years ago, and I'm still involved in it. It's my hope that the cooler heads in the Pentagon will prevail. So far, they have. The Dick Cheney wanted very much an attack on Iran while he was still in office, and he had people within the Defense Department wanting to do his bidding. Fortunately, they were overruled by cooler heads within the Pentagon, some of whom were forced to resign or retire because of their opposition to the war against Iran, but nonetheless, they were able to prevent it. And I'm sure hoping that that is still the case. We'll see. And I think that the delay in making the decision on Afghanistan is perhaps an encouraging sign that President Obama does not want to escalate the Afghanistan war with putting another 40,000 troops in. And I don't know, like I say, it's not very promising at the moment. President Obama has not done what he promised to do. He has certainly not done anything worthy of the Nobel Peace Prize, but there's still a possibility, and I'm hoping that he will come to his senses and oppose the hardliners that he has surrounded himself with, and like Jack Kennedy tried to do. Unfortunately, Jack Kennedy tipped his hand to too many folks and ahead of time, and was prevented from pulling us out of Vietnam by his assassination. I am hoping that President Obama plays it close to the vest until he has an opportunity to present the world with a fait accompli and announce that he is supporting what's left of our troops by bringing them all home while they're still alive.
And you also run an organization, it's called The Patriots, and I was looking at the list of some of the people involved in your organization, being Rear Admirals and others. I was wondering if you could quickly tell our listening audience a little bit about your organization, and just briefly, just some of the more prominent members of your organization.
Sure. The Patriots is an organization I founded 27 years ago. To fight Reagan's Star Wars scheme and all the lies which the Reagan administration was telling the American people. And Patriots has an advisory board, including generals and admirals from all the military services, and also includes professors from around the world, including professors from both Egypt and Israel, and includes prominent clergy persons, Bishop Tom Gumbleton, Bishop Leroy Mathiesen. And so we do indeed have a distinguished advisory board and board of fellows: Vice Admiral Noel Geiler, Major General Jack Kidd, Colonel James Burkholder, Brigadier General Joseph Adams, Rear Admiral Eugene Carroll, Brigadier General Homer Boucher, goes on and on, Rear Admiral Ralph Weymouth. Now, some of these folks are passed away, but they were instrumental in our drive to end the government lies and myths surrounding Star Wars, and we've continued the work to fight more recent government myths and lies, including, of course, that of 9/11.
And in 2000, you ran as a candidate for the Reform Party in the U.S. presidential campaign. And what happens is I noticed on your website, The Patriots, it listed three different platforms that you ran on, but I thought I'd quickly talk about just two of them. One of them being electoral reform and international trade reform. With these two in mind, what are your thoughts on how Obama/Bush administration has, with the rest of the U.S. and the rest of North America now being gutted by all these trade policies and being sold down the road, how can the people regain control of our natural resources, regain control over our government, and make sure that our government is held accountable? Because realistically, I think in any democracy/republic, whichever way you want to look at it, it is the people who are the boss and the politicians who are the employees. Any natural resources are owned by the people, and only the people is where my thoughts are. What's yours there, Dr. Bowman?
Well, yes, in theory, that's absolutely correct. We here in the United States are not a democracy. We are a republic with a representative form of government. The downside of this is that the representative bodies are so large that it is impossible for them to meet together like in a town hall meeting and select one of their own to represent them at the next level. And so you have a system that requires big money in order to run for office in this country. And so it has gradually come to be that those who are supposedly representing the people are the extremely wealthy or those who sell themselves to the extremely wealthy. And in that kind of a situation, we have a government that serves the wealthy few instead of serving the people that they're supposed to represent.
We're seeing the exact same thing up here in Canada in regards that you're seeing companies like Lafarge, being the largest cement company in North America, headquartered over out of France, Ashgrove, headquartered out of Kansas City. You're seeing those companies that come up here, and they're exploiting the natural resources massively. What they're doing, actually, technically, they're not mining per se. They're acquiring material rock to be used in public works. But what they're doing at the same time, they're shipping the stuff down south. They're extracting all the minerals, and then they're giving us back the rock to use in bridges, cement, and everything else. Well, we're not collecting the money off of the natural resources that are within the rock, which I find to be highly corrupt. And yet our government up here, the province of British Columbia, has been entangled in all of this corruption. I have evidence on my website which points to all this stuff. The past NDP government, the current Liberal government, even the social credit government of the 80s was showing how our minerals could be used. But then we got certain members involved in these parties, and these parties have turned us into nothing more that they've sold us all down the road. And, you know, as a one of the people who would like to see all this stuff return back to control of the people, what would be your suggestion, Dr. Bowman, how we the people are able to regain control of our natural resources and then use the money to lower the taxes, give people a bigger dividend check, help with social housing, help with social issues, and put it back to the money goes directly in to help the people only?
Well, the only way to do that is to have a government that serves the people. Down here in the U.S., we say we need a government that follows the Constitution, honors the truth, and serves the people, because the first two are sort of necessary if you're going to have the third. How we the people can take back our government so that it does serve us, it looks to me like we at least require three things. One is we need electoral reform so that we, in this country where we're totally dominated by a two-party system, both of which are owned at the highest level by the wealthy elite, we need to have electoral reform which opens it up to third parties. We need a return to paper ballots so that everybody's vote can be counted, recounted, and audited as necessary. We need to have true finance, campaign finance reform, which means public financing of campaigns, taking private money out of campaigns completely. These kinds of things are necessary in order to give the people a real choice. But there are two other things that are necessary. One is media reform, because you can't have any kind of democracy unless you have an educated electorate, not a brainwashed electorate. And in this regard, we're worse off in this country than you are up in Canada. Our media, almost all of it, is owned by half a dozen multinational corporations. And there's hardly any independent or family-owned newspapers, television, or radio stations left in this country. The third necessary piece of this whole thing is monetary reform or banking reform, because for the people to have a government that serves them means that the people have the money they need to take care of their basic needs and have free exchange of goods and services between the people. And that means that you need money issued by the government in sufficient quantity to the people, and for that money to be issued debt-free, like Lincoln's greenbacks and the greenbacks that John F. Kennedy wanted to issue. With the situation we have now in this country with the Federal Reserve, which is about as federal as Federal Express, a private cartel printing all the money and issuing it only as debt with interest to be paid to the stockholders of the Federal Reserve banks, it impoverishes the people. And this has been known for centuries. And the answer has been known for centuries, and that is to have a government or a bank controlled by the people that issues debt-free money. And that's a large part of having a true democracy. It's an essential part of a populist revolution. So electoral reform, media reform, and monetary or banking reform. These are the things that we have to strive for in order to take back our countries and get governments which truly serve our needs. Once that is done, all these other things, the use of resources, the exploitation of labor, the health system, which we're in this country, again, much, much worse off than you are in Canada, dominated by the insurance companies. All these problems can be solved once we have a government that is beholden to the people and not to the big money interests.
Well, what we're seeing up here in Canada, what we're seeing is that the minority government under Harper right now, when they came to power, there was actually a coup, and a prominent member of the United States came up here one time, was doing a lecture, and he pointed towards the oil industry being behind this possible coup, which overthrew the government at that time and then therefore put Harper in place. Harper, he said that he'd be more transparent with his government, more open to the people, yet a lot of his policies haven't been that open, haven't been that transparent. It's been the exact same old guy. It's been more militaristic at the same time, because there's more support towards the military, there's more more desire to stay in Afghanistan. We're there till 2011. There's a possibility if Harper gets a majority government, there's a possibility we could be even there even longer. The war resistors up here are trying to stay up here. Harper's government is trying to deport them. We have one war resistor by the name of Rodney Watson, who is in sanctuary over in the First United Church here in Vancouver. If he steps foot out of that church, he's going to be deported. He got ordered to leave the country on September 11th, 2009. Also at the same time is that we do our mainstream media is centrally located in a few families' hands, and what we're seeing right now is we're seeing one of them, being Global, is suffering through a massive debt right now. A lot of it has to sell off a lot of its resources at the same time, and we're seeing independent voices like Co-op Radio being the only independent membership-owned radio station here in Vancouver. So we're seeing a lot of corruption going on up here, and all we're trying to do is we're trying to take it back, and we're trying to educate the people. And yes, I agree with everything that you were saying there, Dr. Bowman, but it looks like we're almost out of time. I wanted to quickly ask you one last question, though. I ran across this story, and this is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today. During the Bush administration, the CIA had carried out these flights where they kidnapped people and sent them to nations where they could be tortured at, all under the excuse of the war on terrorism. In one particular case, the headlines coming off of a website called The Raw Story, and this is the headlines, former UK ambassador, CIA sent people to be raped with broken bottles. And I'd like to know, what are your thoughts on the issue of, what happened with the CIA, and how can this be reformed, allowing the citizens to get control of the system so that this is not repeated again and again and again? Each new president you get in, the CIA keeps running amok.
Well, John F. Kennedy and Jimmy Carter both tried to reform the CIA, and they failed. I would not try. If I were president of the United States, I would abolish the CIA instantly.
And could you basically, so once you abolish it, what would you replace it with? Because Pastor Manning is a prime example. The CIA is supposed to have a constitution of working outside of the United States, yet Pastor Manning, who lives over in Harlem, over New York, has been visited by members of the CIA, Homeland Security, and members from the New York Police Force, and they came to him because he has a stance against Obama, which freedom of speech, he's allowed to have that stance, and they've come to him and they warned him about him possibly being arrested. Last time I checked, like I'm saying, the CIA is supposed to operate outside of the United States, so what would you replace the CIA with so that the United States is you keep your security, but at the same time you don't allow this madness to happen within the CIA to allow it to continue on?
Well, we already have the defense intelligence agencies, which gather intelligence from around the world, with the Army, Navy, and Air Force, and we don't need anything beyond that. I would simply abolish the CIA and take some of their good analysts, and there are many in the CIA, and transfer them to the Defense Intelligence Agency, and put the whole thing under the control of somebody like Ray McGovern, who has extensive intelligence experience, and yet is on the side of the people. And I would also, of course, abolish the Department of Homeland Security. And I would do these things without warning.
Well, thank you very much for agreeing to come on there today, Dr. Bowman. This is Co-op Radio, 102.7 FM, CFRO, Monday Brown Bagger. My name is Reginald Angus Argue. And thank you again there, Dr. Bowman. And
you bet. Send people to our website, thepatriots.us.
And what is your email? If you leave us last thing with your email so that people can email you just in case that they want to ask you some more questions?
Sure. bob@thepatriots.us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bowman. And until we meet again next week, to all our listening audience, have a great day.